Today we'll continue with a series of talks on Vipassana meditation. So today I thought I would talk about the value, the purpose of meditation, of Vipassana meditation. I've talked a little bit about this already in talks about what is meditation and what is specifically Vipassana meditation. But now I'd like to talk in detail about the purpose of meditation, of Vipassana meditation. And this goes in line with the idea of us being teachers and the meditators being students. Because a teacher in any field is someone who has something of some benefit or some purpose or some value to the student. And the student comes to learn from the teacher because they expect some value or some benefit from the study which they've undergone. And the practice of meditation is very much like a study. It's a study of our own hearts and our own minds, a study of reality. And the idea is that it will give us some benefit in our lives. And the benefits of Vipassana meditation, the Lord Buddha laid down that those things which were of value, which could be gained through the practice of the Buddha's teaching, they're called the Sara Dhamma. Sara means something which is of essence or of essential value or of benefit or of purpose. And the Dhamma is, these are the Dhammas. These are the realities or the things which can be realized for oneself. And these are the five things which come from the practice of the Buddha's teaching, the practice of Vipassana meditation, the practice to see clearly. And so these five things, I would say, are the value or the benefit which we gain from practicing meditation. And these are one, morality. Number two, concentration. Number three, wisdom. Number four, freedom. And number five, knowledge and vision of freedom. Knowing that we are free. These five things the Lord Buddha said are of true value and are the true value which we can gain through the practice of the Lord Buddha's teaching. So when people come to practice Vipassana meditation and they wonder what value or what benefit it will be to them, and we have something which is very concrete, which we can use to explain the value of the Buddha's teaching. So the first item is morality. This is the thing which is of value to us that we gain from the meditation. You can see that when you first come to the meditation center, already we're beginning to teach the meditators about morality. We're beginning to undertake a study of morality, how to be moral, how to be virtuous. We give meditators 8 moral virtues or moral rules to live by during the time that they're here. And we explain to people about the 5 precepts: not to kill, not to steal, not to commit sexual misconduct, not to use false speech, not to take drugs and alcohol. And so we start at this point from this point giving people a sense of morality, a sense of something which is important. We give these abstentions an importance, or we show the importance of these things to the meditators. The meditators to realize the importance of being a virtuous person and the benefit of it. And so the idea is that when a meditator leaves, they will be keen in the observation and adherence to these moral virtues. Further in the meditation, when we practice morality, it means to keep the mind from wandering into defilements, to keep the mind from wanting to hurt other people and so on. when we simply give the meditator the precepts, you can consider that the meditator then has morality or is training in morality. But until we actually change the mind and adjust the mind based on our experience, it's not really true that the meditator has morality. But once they are able to train themselves and see that these things are bad and remember bad things that we have done, and see it, the danger in those bad deeds through clear comprehension and understanding. Once our mind settles and we start to see the bad things we've done, start to realize about bad deeds of body, bad deeds of speech, how they are something which leads to suffering for ourselves and suffering for others, and are things which are not good. Until we can realize that, then you can't really say that the person has morality. Once we realize these things, then we really and truly have morality. So this is something which comes through the meditation, that further from just explaining to the meditator about precepts, the practice of vipassana, or the practice of the Buddha's teaching, has a great benefit that it ingrains moral virtue into the meditator's mind. The meditator becomes a kind and gentle, a patient, a generous, a grateful human being, someone who is not liable to do or say bad things, having seen for oneself the impact that these bad deeds have. So the meditator comes to be one who has moral virtue. As a result of not doing bad deeds or saying bad things, the meditator is able to find happiness and peace and friendship among other beings. This is the first thing which is of value in the meditation practice. The second thing is concentration. And the meditator starts to practice. This is something which many people already understand as being a benefit of meditation. They expect it, in fact. When you come to practice meditation, you expect that you should gain some level of concentration. The concentration we're talking about here has the benefit that it destroys the nivarana, the hindrances. It takes bad emotions, unwholesome emotions out of the mind. It takes anger out of the mind, it takes greed, it takes lust, it takes frustration, boredom, sadness. It keeps the mind calm and happy. It keeps the mind from falling into unhappiness or into desire or lust or need or addiction. And when we practice meditation, once we start to fix the mind and focus the mind on the present moment, and we're able to train the mind out of its thinking about the past or thinking about the future or wandering or falling into obsession or obsessing about external things or internal things. When we can retrain the mind, we find our mind starts to calm down, starts to quiet down. And really we have none of the five hindrances, no more desire or aversion or drowsiness, laziness, mental distraction or doubt. That our mind is calm and peaceful and content, not wondering or worrying or fretting or upset or intoxicated, or it's not obstructed in any way. That our mind is going straight and going quickly on the path which it intends. When we intend to do something, our mind is fixed and focused on that. When we walk, our mind is fixed and focused on the walking. When we sit, our mind is fixed and focused on the rising and the falling of the stomach. This is concentration, and it has the benefit of keeping our mind calm and at peace. When meditators practice for days, they can find that even after 5 or 6 days, their mind starts to calm down, and they're able to experience a state of peace and calm which they've never perhaps felt before. And so we can see that this is a benefit, much, much nicer and much happier than having to live through all sorts of frustration and boredom and anxiety and stress and anger and hatred and so on, and doubt and worry and mental distraction, that our mind becomes peaceful and calm and is quite pleasant, quite enjoyable. This is a second benefit of the meditation, something which is of real value, which the Lord Buddha had, is to set up as something beneficial or something of essential value. The third is wisdom. And wisdom is the highest in the Buddha's teaching. It's the highest virtue or the highest thing which we can gain, because morality or concentration are things which can only give benefit temporarily. If a person keeps moral precepts and tries to be a good person, it's surely still possible that if their mind is upset beyond their ability to control, they can find themselves doing and saying bad things even in the future. No matter how long they train themselves in morality alone, without concentration and wisdom, their minds can still become upset and lead them to do and say bad things. The same if a person has concentration, suppose they have morality and concentration, their minds are peaceful and calm, and they're able to control their minds to the extent that bad thoughts and bad emotions don't arise in the mind, as far as greed and as far as anger. But because delusion still exists, or ignorance still exists, the mind is still unaware of the dangers. There's been no recognition of the danger of anger, the danger of greed, and there's been no eradication of delusion. The mind is still able to fall into wrong view, is still able to fall into conceit, holding oneself above others, or holding oneself up as high, as good, holding onto this as me or mine. And when one leaves off from practice of concentration, the mind goes straight back to greed, straight back to anger, and all of the five hindrances come up again, because the delusion has not yet been eradicated. Ignorance has not yet been given up. One simply hasn't come to realize the truth. And this is, you can compare it to someone who hasn't studied yet in university, or hasn't studied yet in school. That they can work and work and work and train themselves as hard. They can work as hard as they may, as hard as they want. But if they are unskilled in whatever task they are doing, if they haven't gone to school for it, their hard work and their effort still in the end leads to very little. A person who is a carpenter or so on, if they've never studied in school, if they've never studied the details behind it. For instance, you want to put cement together. If you don't know anything about putting cement, you can work and work and put it together, and you don't know, you have to add water, you have to add sand, you have to add this much. If you simply don't know, all of your work and effort can be without fruit. This is like ignorance. Even though we might have so much effort in our practice, if we don't yet understand, or if we don't practice to come to see clearly, if we simply fix the mind on a single point or so on, we don't understand we're able to do away with the hindrances, but we don't understand the danger. We aren't able to see the disadvantages of holding on. We aren't able to see impermanent suffering in oneself. When we stop practicing, our mind goes straight back to the defilements. So wisdom is something which is higher than morality and concentration, and is considered another very essential thing. In wisdom, we can separate into three kinds. One is suttamaya panya, wisdom which we've heard when we hear someone else telling us, explaining us about how to practice. Then chintamaya panya, when we consider what was said and we think about it and we put it into words that we can understand and set out and try to practice it. Figure out how it is that this should be put into practice. What is exactly it means? Chintamaya panya, and then pavanamaya panya. At the time when we practice and then we see clearly, we see impermanence, we see suffering, we see non-self. We see that the things which we hold on to are impermanent. We see that the things which we desire are unsatisfying. And we see that the things which we don't like and don't like, and the things which we hold on to and try to control, are not under our control, are not ours, are not us, are not me, are not mine, and so on. This is what the Lord Buddha called wisdom. This is pavanamaya panya, through meditation practice, through the development of the mind. When wisdom arises, it has the value of abandoning even the deep-rooted defilements, wrong view, conceit, all sorts of attachments are uprooted. Our interest in sensuality, our interest in anything internal or external is uprooted. And we find that we are not keen, we are not interested in things which are impermanent suffering and non-self. We've come to see that these things are not satisfying. This is something which is of most value so that our minds will not strive after impermanent things and will not fall into suffering when the things which we desire disappear. And when bad things come, we will not become upset. When people say bad things or do bad things, our minds will not become upset because we will see that the things, even our own selves or the things which we thought, the things which we take to belong to us, don't actually belong to us. Even ourselves, our own body, our own mind is not ours. It's something which arises and ceases of its own accord. When we see this and our mind lets go, we see this through wisdom. Our mind lets go and we become peaceful and calm all the time. Even if we stop practicing, we have knowledge. We can stop putting out effort, stop being mindful, stop walking, stop sitting, but the knowledge still exists. And at any moment that bad things arise, the mind sees those things based on one's knowledge. And there can be no more falling into delusion. For instance, when a person is walking in a dark room and they step on a rope. If you've ever stepped on a rope in a dark room, you know what it's like. You think right away it's a snake. You think right away you've stepped on a snake and you jump. But if you're walking around in a lit room and you see the rope on the floor and you step on it, even if you turn the light off again and step on the rope, you know that it's a rope. In this way, wisdom is something which does not erode, does not fade away. And bhavanamayapanya is something which lasts till the end of samsara. And the fourth thing which is of value, which the Lord Buddha taught, is freedom, vimutti. And freedom is something which comes once a person has developed morality, concentration, and wisdom. And then when the mind becomes free from its addictions and its attachments and its defilements of greed, of anger, of delusion, when these things no longer exist in the mind, this is called freedom. This is something which is of benefit because it stops the person from doing and saying bad things. It stops hindrances and obstacles from arising in the mind. It stops all unpleasantness from arising in the mind. Freedom from all unwholesome things means freedom from all suffering. Because no matter what arises, a person is peaceful and happy at all times, unattached to those things which arise. Not saying, oh, this bad thing has arisen for me, or oh, this good thing has arisen for me, has disappeared for me, or my good thing has disappeared, or that something bad has arisen for me, and so on. There's only the arising and ceasing, and one is able to see clearly that these are simply phenomena which arise and cease, which have no owner. And so one never becomes upset or dissatisfied or angry or frustrated. And the fifth thing which is of value, which the Lord Buddha taught, which we gain through the practice of the Buddha's teaching, is knowledge and vision of freedom. The knowledge and vision of freedom is something which is of supreme value. It comes once we are free, once we have gained the wisdom insight, and we become free from defilements. The knowledge of it is of supreme value. And it's of supreme value not exactly because it leads to anything else, but because it is the state of supreme happiness and the state of supreme peace and security. As long as someone hasn't realized, hasn't come to know for themselves that the defilements have been eradicated, that one has no longer has evil, unwholesome states in one's mind. For so long, the person will always be afraid and be worried and ashamed, will always be in a state of unrest, without peace, always looking for a refuge, looking for some safety, trying to find something that will make one happy. But once we know for ourselves that this defilement is gone, this defilement is gone, we're able to see clearly and clearly that more and more defilements have left, never to come back. We feel more and more secure, more and more safe, and we become free from fear and worry, free from sorrow and lamentation and despair. So this is something which is of great value. Once we realize for ourselves, our mind becomes without fear, without worry. We never have anything to fear from any quarter. Anything around us or inside of us, there's nothing which will bring us discomfort or despair. So these five things, the Lord Buddha said, are of the utmost value or of essential value. And these are the five benefits, the five things which we hope to gain from our training. As we train, we will become moral and virtuous people. We will stop doing and saying bad things. Our minds will become peaceful and we'll come to see clearly with wisdom. When we see clearly with wisdom, we'll be free. When we're free, we'll know for ourselves that we're free. And when we know for ourselves that we're free, we'll be at peace and content in the knowledge that there's nothing left to be done. And this is the benefits, the sara dhamma, the things which are of essential benefit, and the things which are of value, which we as teachers in Vipassana meditation hope to impart unto our students. And this is the Dhamma which I would present to you today. So now we continue to practice first mindful prostration and then walking and then sitting.